Welcome back, everyone. As you know, my guest today is Lou Krieger. Lou is the author of a lot of books on poker, including Poker for Dummies, Internet Poker, How to Play and Beat Online Poker Games, myriad of other books. You can find lots of information on Lou, including his website, which I'm going to give you right now. That's www.loukrieger.com. That's Lou Krieger. In a moment, I'm going to, of course, let Lou tell you about his blog and how you can find, how you can muse through some of his writings. But meanwhile, you can also come to our website, which is growing and developing, at Annie Jennings PR. PokerCast.com. That's Annie Jennings PR. PokerCast.com. Publicist by day, poker player by night. So, Lou, welcome back.
Annie, it's great to be here.
Terrific. Now, how can people get to your blog and tell us all the goodies we're going to find on there?
Well, they can get to my blog by going to loukrieger.blogspot.com. And what can they find on my blog? They can find all sorts of information about what's going on in the world of poker, from analysis of the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act to various bills that would restore poker's legality, to tips on playing poker and poker strategy, to the United States fighting with Tiny Antigua before the World Trade Organization. And if you are sitting there thinking, what in the world does this have to do with poker? It has everything to do with online poker. Just go to the blog and read through there, or do a search on the blog for World Trade Organization. But it will keep you up to date on the happenings of the world of poker, and occasionally I diverge into other topics that capture my attention.
I know, it sounds wonderful. All of them brilliant, of course, Lou. Now, hey, back to our sit-and-go strategy. We want to talk about our internet. We want to talk about how to win on the internet, too. We just, previous podcast, we did speak about sit-and-go, so you can go back and check that one out if you haven't heard it already. But now I want to know about online tells. What do we have going for us on an online? We've got a computer and a screen, and what else? Maybe screen names. Tell me something. Does the name, like, I'm going to get you, scare anybody? Or aces full, scare anybody? does your choice of name influence anyone?
It really doesn't.
No?
No, listen, if anything, it's exactly the opposite. So if, somebody has a name like Innocent Waif or Rubber Ducky, I mean, just sit there and say to yourself, these people are sharks waiting to devour me.
Oh, I'll tell you, that Rubber Ducky, that's cute. Have you seen that one at all?
I have seen it. I don't know who it is, but I've seen Rubber Ducky.
And you know they're good. Well, right, so you're saying that people just, image management, we can talk a little bit about that now, because in choosing a name, what are some things you do want to consider in choosing a screen name?
Well, first of all, most people don't think of it in terms of a poker image they want to present. They think of it in terms of coming up with a cool handle that has some relationship to poker.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm a fish, or poker ace.
Sure.
Or, swallow this.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that can have a poker connotation.
Or see on the river.
Yeah, that hasn't already been taken.
Yeah.
Is going to be made into a screen name. And different, some players have different names on different sites. So,
Oh, sure.
Rubber Ducky on one site may be Carnivorous Shark on another.
Oh, very interesting.
But the tells don't come from the name.
Uh-huh.
They come from their actions. Now, in a live brick-and-mortar poker room, I can see you. I can look at your eyes. I can watch your body language. I can see if you sit bolt upright in your seat after you've been sort of on a slow, gradual slump as you've thrown away hand after hand. If you sit bolt upright, I'm thinking you got a pretty good hand dealt to you this time after getting nothing but terrible cards for the past 15 minutes. I can't see that online, so I have to go to other kinds of things to give me a clue into your behavior. So there are all of these sort of proxy measure tells. Now, one of the biggest ones is the timing delay. And again, tells must be interpreted for each individual player. An action that's a tell for you isn't necessarily a tell for me, and vice versa. Now, many players will get their hand and they don't like it, and there's a bunch of players that are that have to act before they do. They'll click, fold the auto fold button so that when the action gets to them, it instantly folds their hand. And when you see somebody that instant folds all the time, and then they take some time before they act on their hand, you can take it that they have a good hand. There are players that do other things as well. There are some players who will, if they have a terrific hand, they'll defer acting for a rather long period of time. And what they're trying to do is convince you that they have a marginal hand, and they're trying to sit there and decide, gee, should I call? Should I fold? Should I call? Should I fold? Should I call? Should I fold? And suddenly they raise. And you know that's a tell. It's the old, if you're strong, act weak. If you're weak, act strong. They're just putting on an act to try to convince you that they don't have much of a hand at all. And then they're throwing in a raise. So you have to look at the timing patterns and make your decision about whether somebody is trying to convince you they have other than what they do. And if they're overtly trying to convince you they have a weak hand, you can take it for certain that they have a strong hand. Another thing that's a little bit less obvious is to look at the dialogue box in an online game. If you have an opponent who's chatty and has been bantering and maybe flirting with somebody named Poker Queen at, two seats over, or insulting other players and commenting on the hands, if he suddenly shuts up, he's got a hand that he wants to play, and it's probably a big hand. So he's gone off his mode of being a chatterbox while he's not involved in a hand, to shutting up so he can focus on the hand that he does have and the hand that he does intend to play.
Well, that's interesting. All right, so pay attention to that online chatting, that's for sure. And when it stops, take note, actually.
When the chatting stops, take note. Also, if they've been quiet and they start chatting, they probably don't have much of a hand. Most people don't want distractions when they have a hand they have to concentrate on.
Of course.
It's
yeah.
That way in a land-based casino, and it's that way online, too. Don't talk to me now, I'm in a hand, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about the hand, they'll chat away because they have sort of a babbly personality.
Now, a question to you about online players who try to put you on tilt through chat. Have you come across something like that?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. It happens all the time. They're always insulting each other.
They really are.
It's very easy to be profane on online. And it's a little more difficult to do it in a poker room when you have to look somebody in the eye and do it. First of all, there's probably a 50-50 chance that if you're the average person, the guy you're saying it to is going to be bigger than you are. And that's never a good idea.
That's very, very funny.
But if you're on the internet and, you're in London and they're in, Idaho, you can become a bully or become a boor or any other obnoxious kind of personality that you feel like acquiring for the day, because nobody is going to call you out on it, and all I can do is notify the site that somebody's behavior is bad, and it's not like it is in a live card room. The other constraint you have in a live card room is you've got a bunch of other players at the table, and they're looking at you too, and they're all sitting there thinking, boy, what a schmuck this guy is. But you can be, and nobody wants to behave that way and know they're being judged that way by their peers, but it's easier to be a horse's ass anonymously than it is in full view of other players that you play with today, tomorrow, and the next day.
So, Lou, I mean, there's one more tell, and I'm sure there are others we can talk about too, but this is an interesting tell because you actually get to tell on yourself. And what I mean by that is you have access online to some of your stats, some of your playing stats. So tell us a little bit about how to use these stats to actually offer tells on your very own play and what they mean to you.
Yeah, I do this all the time. You can look at the number of times you enter the pot voluntarily and a bunch of other statistics that are not available to you if you're playing in a live game at a casino. It's just not there. You can't keep records like that. But if you look and see that, I'm entering 26% of the hands voluntarily, not counting the hands that I'm in the blind on, and I can say to myself, boy, unless I've been dealt a whole bunch of great hands in the past couple of minutes, I am playing too many hands.
Too many hands at 26%. Is that, and that you're gonna stand on the 26%? Let me ask you a question. What range would you consider a good player to be in? Generally speaking, things do change per game. But let's
change. It depends on your opponents, but I'd say 17, 18, 19, maybe even less.
17, 18, 19.
Full-handed game, yeah.
How many handed game?
A full-handed, yeah, as opposed to a short-handed game.
And short-handed, what would you think?
Well, in short-handed, the big difference is when you're in a six-handed game, you're in the blinds one-third of the time, so you cannot afford to sit back and wait for big cards. You have to make moves. You have to raise much more often than you do in a 9 or 10 handed game, and I would guess you're entering probably as many as 35 or 40% of the pots voluntarily.
Well, that's very interesting, and one of our future podcasts coming up, I'm going to ask Lou to go over these stats in more detail, because not only can you find out how many pots you've entered voluntarily, you can also tell about how many pots you folded on the turn, etc. Correct?
You can.
Lots of information available, and what Lou will do is he'll tell us how to evaluate these figures, because many of us have seen these figures. But actually, to know and understand what they mean and how to apply them to bettering our play is something we're really looking forward to discussing with you, Lou. Meanwhile, until we get to an in-depth analysis, would you like to just give us some of your insights and what we need to take away today?
I was just going to offer an insight.
Let's do that.
One of the interesting things you can see is how many pots you win when you call on the river. If you win every pot you call on the river, you're playing much too tightly, because you need to be wrong some of the time to be right more of the time. If you lose on the river way too frequently, let's say you only win 25% of the time you call on the river, you're calling far too often and with weak hands. And what does that mean? It means that you probably, if you made a mistake on the river, you probably made a mistake on the turn, you probably made a mistake on the flop, and you probably even made the mistake of calling before the flop with a hand you should have folded.
In the first place.
Yep.
Let me ask you a question about the win rate when you do call on the river. What would you consider to be a strong player? What percentage of time would they win, other than 100%?
Well, if you're doing it 100%, you're not bluffing enough.
Uh-huh.
You're not betting enough with hands that you could. You're not calling enough with hands that might win.
That's true too.
If you only win every time you call on the river, that means that there are times that somebody bet at you and you folded, and had you called, you would have won as well. So. But some of those times you call with less than perfect hands, you're going to lose. Sometimes you're going to win. But look at it this way. If you have 10 hands that you think are 50-50, you don't know whether you're going to win or you're going to lose. It's an even money proposition. Well, you should be calling all of those hands, and here's why. Half of them you'll win and take the pot, and a half you'll lose. Now, you'll lose one additional bet every time you call, and your opponent has a better hand.
Mm-hmm.
But when you call and you have the better hand, you're going to probably win 10 bets.
Exactly, yeah.
So you'll win 10 times 50, 500, and you'll lose 5 bets, or 50
mm-hmm.
to 5. So it's a huge difference. So having a perfect batting average is the mark of somebody that's a lot higher than he or she really ought to be. I like to see that if I add up the times I call and win on the flop and add to it the times that I bet the river and am not called by my opponent, that adds up to much more than the times I've called and lost.
You know what we're going to have to do in the future is we're going to have to post an actual hand analysis that we can get from one of the sites. And Lou, maybe we can direct our listeners to that particular page. And while we're talking, maybe you can give us a nice visual to go along. Would you be willing to do that for us?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, so let's work on that because I love everything you're saying. It's absolutely brilliant, and there's no one better to present the information than you. And I suspect you're an excellent teacher as well. You might have been a professor in a former life.
Oh, God, I hope not.
But we'd love to do that, so why don't we get to work?
Well, I was thrown out of academia for being politically incorrect.
Is that correct? Is that correct? Is that funny?
In this day and age, I would be...
you would be so in this day and age. Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you tell it like it is, which, you know, that's a respected quality, actually, and one that everybody does admire, so... We love you, Lou.
Well, then I'm loved by the people in that.
You're loved by the people of poker. Poker people. Now, so we will do that. Let's try to get an analysis. We can get a page up on Annie Jennings PR at PokerCast.com and just see if you can run us through some of these scenarios, and we can actually go look. And then people, of course, listening. We have a lot of people listening live, of course, but people listening via podcast will keep the page up for you, and you can go visit it a couple of times and really get a handle of what Lou's saying. He can demonstrate a couple of scenarios for us, folding too much, not betting enough, not calling enough, etc. Just all these things we talked about here today. So
hey,
now
I
we have lots to look forward to.
We do, and I want to add something to the online tells that
please
I just
do.
This is critically important. You have to take notes on your opponents when you're playing online because you will not remember them from one week to the next if you don't do that. When I play in a live casino, I can see somebody I played against 2 years ago. I might not know his name or where he's from, but visually, I know I played against him, and his whole playing style comes to the fore when I look at his face. If I read
really?
Online name, a screen name,
mm-hmm.
I read Rubber Ducky, and I haven't played with Rubber Ducky for a week. I'm not going to know how Rubber Ducky plays. He or she mm-hmm. may be susceptible to, maybe that person uses the auto fold and then delays when they have a good hand. Or maybe they go through that routine of always stalling an abnormally long time when they have a very good hand they want to raise.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they don't. Now, I'm not going to know that unless I've written a note about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read my notes, it makes it very easy to interpret their actions if I've described it in my notes as a particular color.
Sure, which actually leads me to ask you the question, so what's worth noting? Lag time, raising with pairs from first position. I mean, what kind of things do you want to keep your eye out for and note that will help you in
note
the future?
Is you need to remember or recall their betting pattern,
mm-hmm.
and then see what they turned over at the end of the hand. Did they call a raise before the flop from early position in a full game with an ace nine?
That's
did
a big.
Call, if it was three bet to them and the action came around to them and they had a 10-7 suited, did they call two bets cold?
Right.
Told me that that's a very fishy player because if somebody bets and that somebody is raised and then re-raised
mm-hmm.
and there's already a lot of aggressive action in the pot and you're asked to call two bets cold even though you already have one bet in there already with a 10-7, you're really taking a big risk and that says something about your poker ability. So
right, you're
anything
absolutely right.
Out as a clue to how they're going to play or what their behavior is at the table. Is this a player that acts obnoxiously most of the time? Or is it, in which case that's their norm? Or is it a player who's usually quiet but today is, sort of going mad at the table? That tells you that they're on tilt.
Going mad. You're funny, but you're absolutely right. I personally keep the chat off all the time because it's very distracting to me to see all those happy faces popping up all over the place. Or those whatever faces. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, yeah.
The
people that just type in, NH for nice hand and that sort of thing, that's kind of innocuous chat, and I don't have a way to categorize it, except that if they do it all the time and then they stop, I know they have a decision to make.
See, you have the ability to keep a lot. You've been playing in your mind. You have a lot of experience. How many years have you been playing, Lou?
Oh, God. I learned when I was a little kid.
Really?
7 years old, yeah.
Really?
It's ebbed and flowed in my lifetime, but a long time.
So because you're able to remember, I mean, we all know these internet games, and internet games especially are very quickly played, a hand's very quickly played, and you seem to have the ability to recall the betting pattern, not knowing at the time
you're
going to be
able. Well, I'm talking about recalling the betting pattern in that particular hand. If I notice somebody who's still there on the river, and maybe they made bottom pair, and they had a hand like 9-7,
right.
Before the flop, and it was raised, and they cold called the raise, and they wound up in a hand where there was betting on every round, and they're still there with a pair of nines, and there's three overcards on the board. That tells me something about that player. Now I'm not going to remember that at all, and so the way I deal with it is to write a note about it in the notes box, and then I have a note on that player, and I don't have to remember anything.
Sure, I'm willing to go down with a low pair, with the low pair on the board. Well, that's interesting. Now,
the guy with a short sword against the guy with a cannon.
Yeah, of course.
See that in poker games, and you want to know that because what that tells you is that when you have a marginal hand. You need to bet because that guy is going to call you with the weakest garbage out there. And that's a very different player than somebody who only turns over big hands when he goes to the river. That person you might want to check the river down against because he probably has a big hand just like you do. But the guy whose playing range runs from aces to 6-5 offsuit, that's a lot of hands that latter player could be playing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to
sure.
beat most of them if you've got something like Top Pair, if you can beat most of them, then you need to be betting into him all the time.
So you're not going to worry that he's finally gotten a good hand. You're going to look at this as if I can beat most of his hand.
Yeah, when he finally has a good hand, he's going to win. But you're not playing your hand against your opponent's hand.
Good point. You're playing
the range of hands that you would play against the range of hands your opponent would play. So if somebody is a maniac and would raise just as easily with four deuce as with ace ace, you will play against that person very differently than you would against somebody who raises only with pocket kings, queens, aces, and ace king. You know, the latter player, you're only going to raise or call with the top half of those hands. So you'd only call with ace ace or king king. The other player that raises with ace ace through four deuce, I mean, you could call, you could even re-raise with almost anything because chances are you have better than, if you have better than an average hand, you can re-raise them and you're probably ahead at that point.
You know, I have a couple of closing questions for you, probably about three, but I think the questions are going to be, one is, what do you wish more poker players knew to improve their game? So what do you really wish people knew better, players knew better, basically? And I'll ask you the number one mistake poker players make, and then I'll think of the third question in a moment.
The number one mistake poker players make is simple. They call when they should fold. They play too many hands. Poker is fun, and we like to play. That's why we go to a card room. That's why we go online to play. We don't go there to fold hand after hand after hand. And yet, the majority of hands that you're dealt whenever you play poker are going to be junk hands, and they ought to be tossed away.
Right. So what is the one thing that you feel that you would like players to know more about to improve their play?
I think they should realize what I just said earlier, that you're not playing your hand against your opponent, against the hand you think your opponent has. You're playing the range of hands you'll play against the range of hands your opponent is likely to play, and that range of hands for your opponent differs from person to person to person.
And that is based on your many years of experience, because that's very advanced. You're asking me.
It is advanced. Think of it, it's playing against an opponent is a process of thinking about what they might play, and through the development of the hand, the betting, the raising, the calling, you can narrow it down to he could still have anything to, in this situation he's got to have, you know, a good hand.
Yes, it is really, really fascinating, and I think what I'd like to close today is end game strategy, okay? And maybe we can talk about heads up. It's you and another guy or gal or whatever their name is online, right? And I guess we could start with we're about even, and then maybe you could talk a little bit about if you're a significantly shorter stack than your opponent. But so how do you win when it's just you and one other guy and you've made it through your field and now you're going for the gold? Some end game strategy, heads up.
Well, it depends on how deep the chip stacks are. If you are in a multi-table tournament where you and your opponent have a lot of chips in relation to the blind, you can play a trappy kind of game where you make these little raises at three times the big blind. If he plays back at you, you can fold. You're trying to catch a hand where you can trap him for all his chips. You want to play all pairs in that situation, because if you happen to flop a set and he flops, he has ace king and an ace comes on the flop and you flop a set, well then it's doomsday for him. He's gone. You're going to win. In another kind of tournament, the sit and goes where you and your opponent are both desperately short stacked, because the blinds are enormous in relation to the number of chips you have. If you are going to play a hand at all, you better raise. If you're in the small blind and you're thinking about playing, do not call, because chances are the flop is going to miss you. raise, give your opponent a chance to fold. If he has a better hand than you, you're going to be an underdog in the hand, and you might lose. But it's a chance you have to take, because things are very, very different when you're short stacked. Even a lower pair versus a higher pocket pair. If I have sixes and you have queens, and I raise all in because I'm in the small blind and I think my sixes are good, and you call with your pocket queens, well, you know, you're an 80-20 favorite over me, so I still have a 20% chance of winning. It's not that bad. A pocket pair against higher suited connectors is really even money. So you need to take into account the fact that you can win hands even when you're an underdog, and that coupled with whatever chance exists that your opponent is not going to call your raise makes aggressive play the way to go when neither of you have very many chips and you're playing heads up.
All right, terrific. Well, in closing, I'd like to remind everyone that we've been speaking with the amazing poker pro, Luke Krieger. He's the author of many books on poker. You can absolutely visit his website. We encourage you to do so, www.lou.krieger.com. And Lou, tell us a little bit more about your blog and how people can get there.
They can get to my blog by going to loukrieger.blogspot.com. And if you haven't gotten enough of me this way, every Thursday night at 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock Eastern time, and you can adjust it for the rest of the world, go to Hold'em, H-O-L-D-E-M, radio.com, and click the big listen button, and you can hear journalist Amy Calistri and I talk more about poker.
All right, well, that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much, Lou, for being our guest today. Meanwhile, I can say a nice goodbye to all of our thousands of listeners.
Well, this is a lot of fun to do, and I'm probably learning more than the listeners, but I'm enjoying myself immensely.
All right, did an awesome job for us. Thanks again, Lou, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks.
All right, then. Bye for now.